And welcome to Are You Game, a podcast about gaming on the television, on the tablet, and on the tabletop. My name is Lindsay. I'm your host, and I'm joined by James.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be back again for some more gaming.
And also Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hi. How you doing? All right?
Right. Yeah. Good. Suffering the heat here. It's really hot. It's like almost too hot for gaming even.
Surely
when it's too hot, the best thing to do is lock yourself in a room and play games.
Yeah, with the air conditioning, yes, and with all the blinds pulled and the air conditioning on. Yeah, that's true.
It sounds perfect gaming weather, in fact. Nobody wants to talk, nobody wants to move. That's great.
Ideal.
Could be. So what have you guys been... I know we're going to be talking about this a bit later, but I thought we'd just start off with, apart from the heat, what have you been... What are you going to be bringing to the podcast later on? What have you been playing recently, James?
Well, I've kind of got two games on the go at the moment on my PS4. One is the game Everything, which I'm going to speak about later, and then the other one is Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is excellent and is the best Tomb Raider game for, I mean, God knows how long.
It's better than better than the first reboot Tomb Raider. Better than the last one.
Yeah, really? I liked that, but this one is it's even better. I mean, it's
upped it a notch.
Yeah, they have, and it's sort of joined the ranks of the other really good sort of open world games. That, I mean, I don't think it's as good as Far Cry or some of the other ones, but it is considerably better than what happened before the reboot. So I'm really enjoying it.
Nice. Sean, what...
It's just like reboot. That's the problem with these things. Yeah. Like, you just lose track of which one is which.
If you're of a certain age, you do. But
yeah, but they're back on track now, though, definitely, I think. They're really, really back on track.
Sean, what are you playing these days?
Well, I'm dividing my time between almost breaking my iPad with Star Wars Arena, because they keep changing the system on it, I'm sure. And you match people, and at the moment the waiting system is well out of whack. So you keep sort of progressing up the leagues, and then it matches you with people three or four tiers above you, and you just go crumbling down again. So I'm annoyed by that. I've just gone into The Witness, The Witness. I'm going to talk about it a little bit anyway, because I think it'll come up when we discuss your question. But the game I'm going to talk most about today is a game you've probably never heard of called Beasts of Balance.
No, definitely not. Okay.
No. Before we continue, think Jenga.
Just get your mind going on Jenga, and that's our starting point, and then we'll come to it later on. Okay. But it's so much more than that.
Before we continue, Lindsay, I just wanted to say, following up from the last episode as well, I played a game of Secret Hitler.
Oh, you did? Oh, awesome.
I did.
And
it was fantastic. Yeah.
Did the fascists win, or did the liberals win?
Hitler was elected chancellor. So
nice. Oh dear.
Yeah, like at the first opportunity. And it was great.
So it's mirror in real life then.
Yeah. Oh yes. That's the lesson, right?
Did you do the print and play version, or did you actually buy it, or someone had
bought it? No, got the print and play version.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it took a while for us to figure out what was going on, but once we got into it, there was this point about halfway through, and all of a sudden, everyone started arguing and accusing each other. Yeah. It was great.
Because it kind of starts normally, and you kind of like, well, sure, you know, a liberal policy has been passed, until the fascists are up against the wall and they're like, we have to enact the fascist policy now. And that's when it all of a sudden starts, like the lying, the deceit. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Shall I tell you?
Lying, the deceit, it's great. It. There's a quote for the episode advert. Lindsay, what are you playing?
I am playing, again, I'm like James, I've got always a couple of games on the go, more than two sometimes. I'm working, I got Hitman 2016. So another reboot of a series that had its ups and downs. I was never really into it in the past, but I played one of the original classic Hitman games a couple of years ago, one called Blood Money, which is everyone says is the one to play. And this new one is like that, just on a bigger scale with the better graphics and everything. It's great. So I'm really enjoying that sandboxy type element of it. They've recently packaged, they did this new Hitman series in episodes. So they released it episode by episode throughout a year. And now they've kind of packaged all the episodes together into one massive game. And I got it really cheap.
So each episode was part of the same game.
Yeah, this was a different thing that they started doing. The studio that made Hitman, they would release, and they started with one episode, which wasn't as expensive as a full game, but it was only like one level. But these levels are enormous. So literally, in any given level, in Hitman, you're supposed to go around and assassinate someone, right? But yeah, in any given level, there are literally, I don't know how many ways that you could do it. As you're walking around, like all the kind of things appear to you and you're like, oh, I could do this. Oh, I could make the chandelier fall. Oh, I could do that. Oh, I can, you know, and there are all the challenges and everything. So literally one level of gameplay could be between 5 and 20 hours. And then a few months later, they released the next level, which is the next episode in the, like he goes somewhere else. So the first one was in Paris, next one was in Italy and so on. And so now they've released them all together. Really good stuff. So I've been enjoying that. And also I'll probably talk about this game later on, but I'm trying to I'm getting ready to go into a game that everyone talked about a few years ago, that everyone still quotes as a classic game, Skyrim, which I never played.
Oh, yeah. I played that.
No, I never played it.
And then, I've only gone as far as like installing 15 mods on the game to make it look prettier and bring it up to date for current, you know, graphics and everything.
Keep us up to date with
how
that's going on. Yeah. Okay. Should we go with my question now?
Yes. Yes. On this show, as usual, we have a question for us all to chew over and talk about. And James posted us this question before, and we're going to talk about it now. So why don't you hit us all with the question, James?
Okay. So the question is, if you could change anything about games, what is it that you would change?
Okay. Sean, you want to go first on this?
Yeah, go for it, Sean.
I'm gonna be controversial to start with. I'm gonna get rid of the cutaway video sequences and long video intros into games.
Oh wait, wait. All of them or just the long ones?
I tell you what. I said I was playing the Witness at the moment. And what is refreshing about that game? It just starts. No fannying around. Just off you go.
Yeah.
It just starts. You're like there. You go. Hang on, what the heck is happening? Nothing.
No backstory.
And it was so refreshing. Yeah, nothing. It's just, oh, I want to play the game, you know? You download a game, and I did it yesterday. I've just bought Warhammer, and it was downloading it on Steam, and it was taking forever.
Total War Warhammer.
Total War Warhammer. Which we'll probably talk about in a future episode. So, but by contrast, just downloading it, you know, and it takes an age to download the game, and you kind of, your anticipation's building. Even in, you know, these games are so heavy, they take so long to download. And so then, you know, so it started up, booted up, off we go. Oh, long intro screen, a long hold screen, then a long intro, then another hold screen. And then this backstory. It's like, okay, I'll find out as the game goes along. And I know that's a bit irrational, and I'm probably spoiling my game experience, but I'm so wanted just, I think I was thinking about it. It's the equivalent of the stereotypical thing of men not wanting to read the instructions. And it's just kind of like, I want to get on with the game.
Just let me touch it. Yeah. I like my cutscenes. I do like cutscenes, but if they're really long, that gets on my nerves. And worse, if you can't pause a cutscene, you know, like if you're going to give me a long cutscene, give me a button that I can press. So I'm like, okay, we're still going. I have to get some water, or someone's calling to me, or one of my kids is asking me something. Give me a button so I can press and pause it. But if I have to sit like uninterrupted through a cutscene, and then someone starts talking to you in the middle of the cutscene, and you can't pause, that's unforgivable in my book.
Definitely, yeah. Although I have a slightly, I don't know, my feelings on this are a bit mixed, because one thing I like to do with certain games is I play them with my wife, and. But she doesn't actually play the game. So she actually likes the cutscenes. She okay. watches them. She likes the story and everything. And I like running around killing people. So she, like when I'm trying to figure out what's going on, I run around shooting and everything. She finds that a bit boring. And then as soon as the cutscene comes on, there's a story. This is what we're doing with Tomb Raider at the moment. Then she's like watching the story and everything. She really likes it. And then I'll go off exploring again. So it's quite the opposite.
Your wife sat on the sofa waiting for a cutscene.
I'm happy to share it with her, but she doesn't like the killing and stuff. So she was just like, we tried it years ago and then she'd end up always throwing the controller at me whenever anyone with a gun appeared. Yeah. So then I was like, okay, you know, so she actually is the opposite of you. But there's a game I just played, which I really enjoyed, but I don't know if you could handle it, Sean, which was Tales from the Borderlands, which is basically the entire game is interactive cutscenes.
This is one of the Telltale games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So as you're going along, you have to.
But they have just enough things that you are doing throughout those cutscenes. You know, there's just enough, I find, in those Telltale games that it doesn't feel like an enormous cutscene.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I found this with. I love Telltale games. The Walking Dead one was great. But I found with Hitman, yeah, there is a long cutscene. And the other thing is, at the end of each time you successfully do your level, right? You do the assassination.
Yeah.
Then you want to go back and do it again in a different way. But they force this kind of end of level cutscene on you, and I understood it the first time because it's setting up the next level. Fine.
Yeah.
But now I've played the level through once. I've seen that cutscene once. I'm on my fourth or fifth playthrough, and they force me through this thing. So every time I finish, it's sort of like, you know, there's a fade, and then the cutscene starts, and I'm like, okay, so this is where I have to get up, and it's a good 2 or 3 minute cutscene. So
yeah,
annoying.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that, Sean. Okay.
Yeah. Well, okay. I was expected to get shouted down on that one, so I'm glad I got through that.
Okay, Lindsay, what would you change if you could change anything about games?
I heard this on another great podcast. Someone was whining about this, and I totally agree. And I'm finding it more and more when I go backwards into, like, when I go and play games, which people say, "Oh, this is a classic game; you should play it." So I might encounter it in Skyrim, but it's the invisible wall. So these are like, this is for those of us playing on current games, open world games, and getting more and more spoilt by bigger and bigger open worlds. When you go back and play earlier games, it can be so frustrating. I mean, I don't mind when I say an invisible wall. I mean, for example, I can't remember which game I was playing. I was playing a game where I walked up to the edge of something and it was a cliff. And I pushed just a little bit over, expecting, oh, no, I'll fall. And you just can't move anymore. So it's a beautiful cliff overlooking. I think it was a Far Cry. My son was playing Far Cry, and I was running around with it. And it's a beautiful cliff overlooking, like, a waterfall and everything. And I ran along the edge thinking, oh, I got to be careful, got to be careful. And I thought, I don't actually have to be that careful. It's not letting me. And then I tried to go over, and it just didn't. Same thing would be – so that kind of, like, invisible wall, or you want to run off the side into like an alleyway in some kind of shooter game or something like that, and you can see the alleyway, you can see the stuff at the end of the alleyway, and you just can't go into it, you know. So that I find really annoying.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
And I find one thing sort of similar is that when you have these characters, you know, like if you're playing as I am at the moment as Lara Croft, and she has this amazing athletic ability, and then there'll be a particular wall which is just like a regular wall or something, and she just won't jump on it. Or she can't she can climb and like swing and do this amazing stuff, but she can't walk through that particular hedge.
Yeah, exactly. Or like a white picket fence is just too much.
Yeah. I obviously there has to be limits to where you can go in the game. But sometimes I feel like you should make it like really obvious that we can't go this way. Yeah. You know?
Like other ways that they would do invisible walls would be, for example, running around a spaceship where you try doors and doors won't open. That's fine. Yeah. So I can't get through that door. Fine. There's a window. I can't get through the window. There's bushes or trees that are so dense that I cannot get off the path. Fine. Or the path is so well defined that you just think, okay, I just have to run down here. But if it's sort of purporting to be kind of open world, and then I ran smack up against an invisible wall, I find that very break the immersion.
I would agree with you, apart from on the spaceship, when you're being chased by the alien, I wish all the doors opened up. Because I hate it when you find a door that doesn't open and the alien just gets
in. Well, but in that case, they've got to give you at least a satisfying sound. Because in some games, they'll give you a sound of like a door that won't open. So you press it, it's like, eh, eh. But where it's just the silence, you know, you're just like, okay, so you haven't, you know. Anyway. What about you, James? What would you take out of a game?
Well, my bugbear is boss fights.
Oh, we've had two controversial ones. I think I stayed.
That's quite controversial, given the amount that they appear in games.
Yeah, well, I actually think they appear a lot less nowadays than they used to. But
yeah, okay.
I find it, I find them really irritating because often you get to the, you know, you get to the boss fight, and what do you have to do? Okay, you basically they're all kind of the same. Like you have to run around the circle, keep running around, hide, wait for the
wait for him to turn around or him to suddenly stop and start
their eye turns purple or you know like they they open up their big claws and there's a gap in the middle or something. Okay, fire, okay, it's closed again, avoid, run around, wait, and it's just so boring, you know, like you just keep going around. I don't find them particularly fun, even if they're easy, which often they're not.
It's funny because I'm on my retro Nintendo. I'm playing Ghosts and Goblins, and there's a boss every bit like that, and it takes me back to when it was a game that I used to play, you know, when it first came out in the 1980s. And I'm trying to remember the sequences, you know, just that of how does he move around the screen? Okay, he goes up, down, round, right, you know, just exactly that, avoiding. And once you've memorized that little technique, it's easy. So I do understand what you're saying, especially as the one on Ghosts and Goblins. He's really tough, even now, for it.
Yeah. I think, though, that of the things that we're talking about, I think two of them at least are less of a problem now. I think it's partly because, for me, the invisible walls is because I'm going back and playing games that I wasn't able to play when they came out for whatever reason, because I was I wasn't gaming at that point. And the same thing might be with the boss fights as well. I think that they're probably getting to be less. I don't know. I'm sure in Rise of the Tomb Raider, there are a few. And there are in several of them. Any of those kind of fighting games will have boss fights, but
not like it used to. It has a lot less.
But conversely, the cutaways are probably going to get more because this is kind of the games are tending towards to be more kind of animated, realistic film type games. So this kind of this line between the game and the cutaway of the video is actually going to lead to more and more.
I take that every day over a boss fight. Every day.
Nah, give me a boss fight. At least I'm doing something.
Yeah. I suck at boss fights, so I will. Yeah, me too.
I was playing Infamous, one of the Infamous games. I think it was called, what was it called? Something Light, Second Light, something like that. And and I really liked the game. It was really good. It's different. But they had boss fights, and then I got to this one. I just couldn't do it. I just tried. I look online, I'm watching people's videos, I'm going, okay, I have to hang off the wall here, buy this, okay, and then I do it, and whenever I did it, I just died immediately. And then that was it, game over, I'm done, you know, and I'm no mug, I can, you know, complete pretty much every game I play, and this game, I just couldn't progress any further, game over.
Oh, yeah, no.
So I was really irritated with that, and I was like, well, that's me done with the...
Surely you should have Googled a walkthrough.
I looked at YouTube videos and all that business.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry.
And I'd do exactly the same thing and die instantly and go, forget it. I can't be bothered. I'll play something else, you know. So that's one of my issues. That was the one that really kind of tipped me over the edge. And I boss fights, I hate them. So there you go. Anyway, let's move on, shall we?
All right. Well, let's take a little break. And when we come back, let's come back and discuss what we are enjoying or what we brought to the podcast this week. Okay? Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, fine. Let's do it.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We've discussed James's thorny question about video games, and we're going to close off by sharing what game from the television, which would be a console game, from the tablet, or from the tabletop, or indeed a PC game that we've been playing. I can't remember who was going to start this one off. Do you want me?
I think it was me, wasn't it?
I think it was you. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you with a curious game that neither of us had heard about. So
yeah, Jenga. This is one. That's right. It's kind of, I said start thinking Jenga and you kind of get it. So the game that I've been playing on and off since Christmas, in fact, is called Beasts of Balance. Okay. And it is a very new game, Kickstarter game, November last year, I think. I saw it, but didn't get it on Kickstarter. I got it just before Christmas.
Wait, is this a video game?
No. This is a table game and a tablet game.
Okay. There you go.
bear with me a second. Okay. So I said think Jenga. Yeah? So the concept of the game is kind of building. But in Jenga, you're taking the tower down. In this one, you're building up. But it's not that simple. You can see the game is called Beasts of Balance. So essentially what you have are six creatures. If I remember rightly, there's an octopus and there's a gorilla and a dolphin. And they all are of different shapes. And so therefore you can kind of balance them on top of each other. And there are also other bits that represent things like the earth and the air and fire, the elements and so on. So essentially you have a platform, a little dais kind of thing, and the idea is it's a game that's played cooperatively. It's not a competitive game, so you can play it on your own, in fact. So the idea is that you start building these things up, but it's got an app. So on your tablet, you open the app at the same time, and as you put something onto the platform, it scans into the app where there's a cartoon world. So for example, if you put the bear in, the bear will appear within the app.
Oh, okay? Wow. Okay.
And as you build these things up, more and more animals appear in the app, and you can crossbreed them. So if you put two animals together and use a thing, you develop new animals. So there's
like a bear within octopus. The app.
Yeah, those kind of things. So there's 100. I think the example they use is a porpoise, like a bear and a dolphin. Haha, you get a porpoise in it. So the idea is to build and build and build and build. And every time you build something or create something, you get points. So you collaborate together to get the highest score you can. There's a volcano. So if when the platform starts to get a bit wobbly on the table, the volcano starts to rumble, and then when it falls down, the volcano goes off, and that signals the end of the game. But unlike Jenga, when it falls just to the end of the game, if the volcano looks like it's about to go off, you've got 30 seconds to rebuild everything before it stops.
So how long does a game take?
It depends how long it falls down. Mine, usually the ones I've played with people are about 10 minutes. There aren't that many pieces to fit on, but you start really thinking about how you're going to maximize the most points, because also animals have a life span. So an air animal will only last so many turns unless you use something that's got air in it to give it more life and so on. It sounds really complicated, but it's really, really easy. And it's just so much fun. What was refreshing is it's like we talk about competitive games, and this is just a purely cooperative game.
Nice.
You're trying to work together, and you end up, I think this bit will go there. What should we do there? And trying out all these various combinations, and you get a score and you immediately want to try and better your score. Now, I think one of the downsides of Beasts of Balance is that there should be an international league table, so you know where you stand.
Yeah.
But people do tweet out their scores, and I think the highest score is something like 2,000 points at the moment, which is amazing. We on average, I get about 100, 200 points.
Wow.
If you Google Beasts of Balance, you'll see it's just a beautiful piece of plastic game that goes, it's all plastic, but it fits together really nicely, and the app is so beautiful that goes in it, and it's just really challenging, it's just... one of the things we talked about when we wanted to do this podcast is that we're not like hard gamers. We play games and we've got a bit of free time and we enjoy playing games. And this is almost like the perfect 10 minutes.
I'm looking at it now. They're kind of like abstract shapes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I thought these were going to look like kind of little... like miniatures from Warhammer.
No,
looking kind of kid friendly.
Yeah, but so if you look at it, you can see like that. Yeah, exactly. So you play it. I mean, I've played it with my son's too young to play, but I've played it with like nephews, nieces, and it's quite nice. Honestly, it's quite nice to sit and do on your own. But if you look at it, you'll see like the octopus has got a flat head, so he makes it like a good starting point.
Yeah, the lion looks cool. The lion looks cool. Yeah,
and then So you can see there are very odd shapes to do it. I'm really not doing it the description of how the pieces work justice, but it's just really worth looking. I mean, it's not a cheap game, but it's really worth looking into. Just as a, I thought I'd bring it to the podcast because it's so different to anything else nice. That we kind of talk about on the so pod and off the pod, really.
Yeah, so that's definitely. Beasts of Balance, and you can get it now on Amazon as well. Yeah,
yeah, you can get it everywhere. You can see that it's not cheap looking at its price, but it's definitely, I've got it. I think I've had my money's worth out of it.
All right.
But it's a, and I think they're about to bring, because obviously I follow them on Twitter and on Facebook, and they look like they're about to develop a new phase of the game and go back to Kickstarter next month to fund a new phase of the game. So it'll be interesting to watch and see where it goes.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
A bit of family gameplay.
Yeah. Lindsay, you're a board gamer. How do you feel about games that combine like the tabletop with apps and things like that?
We were talking about Secret Hitler before, and that has a very informal app that someone made to go with it just to add a bit of ambiance. I haven't played other. I think it's a good idea. I do worry though that means that on a game, if you get a game which has an app, they have to simultaneously keep both going. You know, like you have to keep that app going. So, for example, Beasts of Balance, they will have to continue to sell as many as they can of the tabletop version to keep financing that app. Right, you know, whereas, do you see what I like? So
yeah.
Again,
I
worry about it. For example, there's an XCOM board game that I'd like to get, which has an app support, which sounds really cool. But then I worry, like, what happens if they stop financing the app, you know, and I still have the game and I want to play, you know, 5 years from now, they don't have the app. Maybe that's just a false worry.
Well, I can see what you mean, but the app is the app. Unless they actually change the game, then the app will always work, won't it? I mean,
your device will change, you know, the app may stay the same, but the device will change. Yeah. I mean, that's happening with some of the apps on my old iPhone now.
True.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. Curious about that one.
It's just as I say, I wanted to bring it because I just think it was different from everything that we've talked about previously. So there you go.
That's what Sean brought to the podcast. I think it's my turn now, isn't it, James? What I brought?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, this time I didn't bring a board game. This time I thought I'd bring a. If I've been recently into the Hitman, the thing that was really hot for me before that I've just finished. And I can't stop thinking about it, was another PC game. I think also on the PlayStation and on other things as well. I'm not sure. But it's called Subnautica. And in Subnautica, you start off you've crashed into this planet, this watery planet, and you have some fins and you can kind of go out and swimming, and then you can start, you know, you want to get some food and then you can build some better fins to keep swimming further. And then you find a bit of metal and then you can build something else and you can keep going further and further. I got it kind of by accident. A friend got it for me. And it had been on my PC for a while. I'd never touched it. It's an early access game, so they're continually developing it. Mm-hmm. And I just, fired it up to see what it was all about. And within like an hour and a half, I was hooked. And within 2 hours, I suddenly had this realization that I understood why people went so mad for Minecraft. I could have I never understood what the appeal of Minecraft, you know, like running out and trying to, you know, like digging to get other stuff, until I found myself in Subnautica just saying, okay, I've just got to go get a little bit more titanium ore and then I can build the rowboat or whatever. I got to just get this and I can make a flashlight. When I get a flashlight, so that was one thing where I could suddenly realize, like, you know, when he's watching these, I watch my kids watch these Minecraft videos and like, I'm just like, what are you doing? They're like, well, he has to get wood to get this. And looking at the inventory of all the stuff and how they'd be poring over all that information. And I found myself with Subnautica poring over my inventory saying, okay, I need 3 more bits of this algae. I need 2 more bits of this. I need 12 bits of this. So I've got to go out swimming to get more. Because then eventually you can build like dinghies and then submarines and stuff like that. And it's basically a Minecraft underwater, but with more modern graphics. And the other thing that reminded me of Minecraft was it has a day-night thing. So the sun goes down, it's night, and then all of a sudden it's dark underwater. And if you're out of your base, you start hearing all these scary noises and these scary kind of things coming, a bit like the creepers, I guess, would have been in Minecraft that everyone said was so scary, and I never understood. But boy, the scary monsters in Subnautica, I was like, oh, I have to get back right now, you know, jumping out of my skin as I'm swimming desperately to get back to my base. And then the third thing that it made me understand Minecraft, so one was like the exploration and gathering resources, two was the scary things at night, and then three was when I found a cheat code which allowed me to build everything like instantly. And then, because I know that people were doing that on Minecraft as well, you could kind of like just do the free building and not have to go and get all those resources. And so when I got those codes that I could just build anything I want, all of a sudden the game lost a lot of its appeal, because part of it was like I had to find this bit here and find that bit there and go over there to find that bit, and then I was able to just summon them.
Isn't that essentially what the game is, right?
I was going to say, isn't that the purpose of the game?
Yeah, the purpose of the game is to do that. But they do have a thing where you can, like, you know, if you wanted to build it quicker, you can, you know, use the cheat code that they share, in fact. They do have some story elements, so you're kind of figuring out why you are on the planet and what you're supposed to do there. That's really good. But it is essentially, like, open world crafting survival underwater game. That's all it is.
So your aim is purely to develop and survive.
Yeah.
Is there an end point? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think so. No, it's in this one. I don't think there is. They're still working on adding more content to it. So I don't think there is an end point really.
Interesting. Yeah.
But anyway, highly recommended. If you did like that kind of a thing, Subnautica is a great open world survival exploration game. And if you like your sort of underwater swimming and underwater beautiful jellyfish and algae and stuff like that, it's really pretty too.
Things always look really pretty underwater, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
It always looks good. Yeah.
All right, James, what have you brought to the podcast? So we have balancing beasts, we have underwater exploration, and what are you going to tell us about?
I'm bringing everything to the podcast, Lindsay. Everything.
Everything.
When you put that on the Slack, I knew this was going to be the jokes of it. You've played everything.
I have played everything.
You bought everything and you played everything.
Everything. It's all the things. So I'm playing a game called Everything, which is one of the most unique game playing experiences I've ever had, I have to say. It's a remarkable thing. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but it is an astounding
thing. Now, you did send us a video to look at, because neither Sean and I had read about it, but we'd never seen it. And I watched the video for 30 seconds, and I think I'm like, Sean, I have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah, I've seen all these reviews for it, because it just gets amazing reviews, and I've seen that video for it, and I have no idea what happens in this game, but everybody loves it. So, James, explain.
Including me.
Right.
At the beginning, you start as, you're in this world, and you're an animal. I think you're an animal. I was a sheep. And
okay. So you choose that, or is it just
a random spawn?
Just assigned randomly, giving a sheep that I was, but I know you can be other things as well. So you start off as this, you know, as this, in my case, sheep going around, and they move in a funny way. They don't walk. They don't have a walking action. They kind of just flip over. So they flip from their front to the back onto their face, you know, it like just on the four sides.
Is that like the bears in the video?
Yeah, so all the animals do that pretty much. The ones that are taller anyway. So you flip over in this way and you're sort of moving around going, okay, this is pretty, this is nice. And after about like sort of 20 minutes or so of being this sheep and looking around, and you're thinking, okay, what is the point of this? And then suddenly,
I think I would have hit that point at like 2 minutes, but go
no,
on.
No, because it gives you little things and you know, you're curious about, you know, you're waiting for it. And then all of a sudden it kind of opens up into this whole other thing. And once it opens up, I kept finding myself like, essentially you can move from one thing to another. You can be everything in the game. You can, apart from the but apart from the ground and the sky, you can, everything that you can see, you can be it. You can move from that one object
to
the other.
Living things, every living thing, or even inanimate?
Rocks.
Okay.
dirt, and you can go down, right? So you start off, it teaches you how to go down. You start off as a as an animal, and then you go down to a smaller animal, and then you can become grass. And then from grass, you can become a plant. Maybe you'll see a ladybird. You'll go down further into insects. And you keep moving down until you can get to the subatomic level.
Wow. Right?
So you go down and you become like two-dimensional objects inside DNA and things like this.
Okay.
And you're moving, and you can move up. So you can move up from being the sheep. You can go up to becoming a giraffe. And then from the giraffe, you can become a tree. And then from the tree, you can become a maple, let's say. And then you become a redwood. And then from the redwood, because that's the biggest tree of all, you move up. Where do you go up from there? You become the landmass. You become the continent.
And then what's the gameplay element when you're the continent?
Well, I'm getting there. Give me a second. So from the continent, you can then move around as your continent in the sea. And then you can go into the ocean and you can become a whale or, you know, plankton or whatever. Or you can go back up and you can become planes that are flying overhead, clouds. You can become the Aurora Borealis, and you can go up from that. So from the landmass, you can become the planet, and from the planet, you can become the sun, and you can become the solar system. Yeah.
And
I kept, when I was figuring these things out, as I was moving around, I would just have these little moments where I'd be like, just sort of giggling, going, "Oh, I can't believe! Oh look, I'm a planet, I'm a sun." You know, I'm like, I couldn't believe it was like taking me to this next place, and it goes around in a cycle. Now, okay, that's all not well and good, but you're thinking,
I'm still struggling to see
what's the game, right? What's the game? Yeah. Okay, but you can't you can't think about this as a normal game. It's different. It's not a game in the normal sense. It's an experience kind of thing, which I think a lot of. Leaves people cold, those kind of there's that phrase though, the walking simulator thing, which I like games like that, but I find that it's a bit dismissive, isn't it? It's a bit like, well, we're just walking about. So the game is essentially to try and become everything that you can be. You've got to try and collect everything. There's a database.
Oh, right, I see. So, I see. Yeah.
So you have to be everything. You say you collect being a sheep or a ladybird or a piece of grass.
Yeah, but I mean, there are so many. There's a huge inventory of things that you can be. And obviously you don't know what you can be until you find it, and then it adds it to the list. So if you check the inventory for animals, there are loads there.
Does it give you a thing like you have gathered 8 of 88,000 things or something like that? No.
You just you can see how many types of animals there are that you haven't been yet, but you don't know what they are. You just see question mark. So you just go around exploring. But I mean, finding it a bit more. But I mean, there's other aspects of the game I haven't mentioned. So one of the things is you can talk to other objects, and they're very philosophical. They like to lay some philosophy and thoughts on you, and you can also find recordings lectures by the philosopher Alan Watts. So when you find them, you push play on them, and as you continue to play, you're getting this lecture on life and everything going on. And so this is not a normal video game experience. It's designed, I think, as a kind of meditative, calm thing that you can do to relax. And it is deliberately designed to try and make you sort of try and think about your place in the world. And I just love that. I love the fact that, yes, I love video games. I've spoken about Tomb Raider and everything. I love those kind of games. But I love the fact there are also people making these kind of games where the objective of it is not like to get to the end of the story or to kill these people or to build this thing, but it's just for it to be in the game, you know, and whatever that does for you. I just love the fact that there are people doing games like this, which go beyond what a regular game is, you know.
I think for a game like this, the way you've described it, I think one of the things that would make it successful for me to stay in there would have to be the music or the soundtrack.
The music is stunning. It's stunning. Yeah. And in fact, I've just seen they're just releasing it on on vinyl.
You can actually go to the Spotify, and there are some of the tracks on Spotify.
Yeah, and they're releasing it on vinyl, so you know there's people who really want it.
But it's beautiful music, really is.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's really good. And also, what an interesting fact about it is that the trailer, the 11-minute gameplay trailer on that you can watch on YouTube, is on the long list for the best animated film at the Oscars. So,
oh wow,
it could actually be the first video game that wins an Oscar. It's just the gameplay video, and it's been nominated. It's on the long list for the Oscar nomination. So, but I thought it might be a good idea if we played a quick clip for people, just to get an idea of what the atmosphere and of the game sounds like. So,
all right, let's go for it. Let's listen to everything.
Go for it. Do it.
Listen to everything.
Now, we come here right at the start to an extremely important principle, which is the different points of view you get when you change your level of magnification. That is to say, you can look at something with a microscope and see it a certain way. You can look at it with a naked eye and see it in a certain way. You look at it with a telescope and you see it in another way. Now, which level of magnification is the correct one? Well, obviously, they're all correct, but they're just different points of view. When we examine our bloodstreams under a microscope, we see there's one hell of a fight going on. All sorts of microorganisms are chewing each other up. And if we got overly fascinated with our view of our own bloodstreams in the microscope, we should start taking sides, which would be fatal, because the health of our organism depends on the continuance of this battle.
Okay, wow.
There you go. Well, thank you for that. For you.
That's everything.
A bit wiser, a bit more philosophical and calmer now, everybody.
Well, thank you for discussing everything with us, James. I think this is going to bring an end to our...
I've got a question before we end. I want to
before
know.
Before we end? Okay. Go for it.
I just have it. James, since your wife, what's your wife do when you're playing everything? Since she watches the cuttings on I forgot the word.
Cutscenes.
Cutscenes, that's it.
There are no cutscenes in everything, so you'd enjoy it, Sean, because there are no cutscenes.
And no boss fights.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. This is a game where I gave her the control and I said, you have to play this game, you have to try this, because this is something unlike anything you've seen before.
This is everything, surely.
But yeah, so she tried it and she really enjoyed it. I think it's it's a game that a lot of people would like to try. I'm not sure how many people would play it for hours and hours. I am not playing it like in a binge way. I pop in and out. But it's just a nice game to have there available to you if you want to play something different from what you're normally playing. And then I don't feel this need to sort of complete it immediately, you know, which is nice. Okay. It's nice to have that. There's a different kind of feeling. So
yeah.
Anyway, I could talk about this all day, as you can tell. Let's wrap up, shall we?
All right. Let's do that then. Well, thank you, James and Sean, for bringing your games to the podcast. This has been our second episode of Are You Game? So we're still finding our way around this, but we'll be back again in a couple of weeks with yet another question from James and sharing yet some other games from the table, tablet, or television. What was that, James?
I was going to say, and anyone who is listening, and obviously we appreciate you being here right at the beginning of this, anything you can do to help us spread the word, check out our Facebook page, rate us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen to this show, and just spread the word. Tweet us, Instagram us, I don't know, whatever you like. Go for it.
Instagram.
Thanks very much, everybody. On that note...
I'm just thinking of a podcast being on Instagram. Anyway,
all the kids are doing it, Sean. All the kids are doing it.
Oh, are they? Right, yeah. Right.
See you later, everybody.
Show me age.
Thanks, everyone. Cue in the music, guys.
Bye. Bye.